It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
That music can only mean one thing.
Yes.
Our friend, a very important person that he is.
Well, it can mean one of two things. Either Congressman Adam Kinzinger, or as he's known over here, Congressman Maverick, is on the Super Celebrity Hotline, or a homoerotic volleyball game is about to break out. Either one.
We're happy with all of those outcomes.
Yes. Yeah, you know, in the modern era, Congressman, I have to say that I'm open to everything. All right. Now, what is let's talk about, you got a couple of things going on here. I want to start with this because, and we can get into the politics of the moment in just a few minutes because there's a lot going on on Capitol Hill and a lot. And there's some very strange, even in the last hour, some strange things have just occurred concerning Al Gore, the Trumps, China, some other things. But before we get into any of that, I want to ask you about this, the 1787 constructing the peace after the war. Which is a bipartisan thing you're involved with, also from Illinois, Dan Lipinski's involved, trying to find a way to bridge the gap between and kind of open up a lane for moderates, people who, you know, aren't like wacky liberal or wacky conservative that want to kind of go back to the way things were.
Yeah. You know, it's called 1787 Reconstruct because, you know, obviously it feels like we just came out of a war. So, you know, that's what we feel like. But, you know, what the No Labels, it's nolabels.org is the group. But they basically the goal is to bring Republicans and Democrats together. And it's not even so much to say we want to, you know, create moderates. It's like saying, hey, there's actually a lot of area that we can agree on. You know, one of them is, you know, for instance, infrastructure. That's a big deal. The country has a rapidly aging infrastructure, and then you know, tax reform and things along that line. So it's been something I've been involved with for a while. It's just trying to bring people together and have conversations and do one or two or three or four big things over the next couple of years, and I think we have an opportunity to do it.
Do you get a sense, I think the funny part of this is in the Donald Trump era, Donald Trump isn't really a philosophical purist about politics. I don't think that he really is a partisan guy in terms of conservative doctrine or liberal doctrine. I think he's very pragmatic. As a matter of fact, everybody who's met with him says that about him. They come out of the meeting, they go, well, he was actually pretty pragmatic or practical, or, you know, he looked at both sides of the, you know, the situation. But he also understands the idea of the firebrand. He understands the idea that he's got to, you know, do things that draw people's attention, which I think informs his choices more about who he's putting into cabinet positions and other lateral jobs in, you know, around him, than do the politics of the moment. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, what it kind of seems like almost as a president, he's setting up to be, in essence, the brand of the presidency while he puts the right people around him to do the job. I mean, I'm happy with a lot of his choices so far. But I think in this, you know, under a Donald Trump presidency, I think we really do have an opportunity if we take advantage of it and if he leads in the correct way, to do some things that the whole country can jump on board. Now, obviously, you know, like the issue of health care and the repealing of Obamacare, which is going to happen, is a partisan issue, right? That's a big Republican issue. But in the crafting of a replacement bill, maybe we have an opportunity to bring Democrats on board. Same on infrastructure. You know, you're going to have some on the right that basically don't want to do anything with infrastructure because of the spending side of it. And then you have folks like me that say, hey, it's in the Constitution that the federal government does infrastructure. And so, you know, there's really an opportunity, I think, to bring some things. But it doesn't mean we're going to, you know, be in a world of postpartisan politics. I'm sure it'll always continue, as it always has.
Well, there's hope. That certainly means that.
There's no hope for that. Have you seen Twitter? There is no hope for that.
I'm surprised we're talking about it, but I'm happy that we are. Does that make sense?
No.
Let's talk about Secretary of State. Initially, there were four finalists. You had your Romney, Giuliani, your Senator Corker. Mm-hmm. You were saying, you're like, was it Petraeus? Was the other one? Yep. Now they're saying John Huntsman. They're broadening the search a little bit. What do you make of all of that, Congressman?
Well, I think, you know, they are looking at it. They do think they want to get the best person. You know, I think sometimes they throw names out to kind of give the person press to kind of help them out. You know, I heard the name Dana Rohrabacher thrown around. I don't even
former congressman from Orange County, California.
Yeah, I don't even think he could get confirmed in the Senate. So, you know, I think it really is down to, you know, Huntsman may be in the mix now. He'd probably be very good at it. And I know he was an ambassador to China and he has the experience. And so I think there's a lot of candidates. And truthfully, look, President-elect Trump is having a good time kind of keeping everybody waiting. He's turned this into a really massive kind of
publicity stunt.
I don't know, PR thing.
Yeah, I'm going to go with publicity stunt. I don't. Yeah. That's not the way I look at choosing a Secretary of State, but he does. And okay, it's a new reality. He won, and I didn't even run, so I didn't have a chance to beat him. So it's, you know,
right.
I'm just going to look at it like that. All right, now, John Huntsman's interesting because you know what I think John Huntsman is?
Hmm.
John Huntsman is a gigantic sort of reality show choice on his part, production choice on his part, because John Huntsman is got the almost the exact same bio as does Mitt Romney.
Hmm. Yep.
And
kind of look the same, both tan with perfect hair.
And they are friendly rivals or frenemies, those two. Mm. So it would be the ultimate in mopping the floor with Mitt Romney to have John Huntsman get the job, because it'd be like, what? Wait, what? And Huntsman is a reliable guy. He's as you pointed out, he's a former ambassador, he's a former governor. He's the kind of guy that you know, you would imagine certainly looks the part, man. I mean, he's got that family. I remember this when he ran for president. He's got a family that looks like the picture in the frame at Walgreens.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
the one that everybody hates.
Right.
You're wait a minute, it's not a real family.
They're all wearing cable knit sweaters standing on a rock over an ocean, right? And they're like, hey,
yeah,
who
laughing,
are those people?
Together.
Right, right, laughing. One of them has a football in their hand. The other one has a martini. You know, so it's... But it would be an interesting choice, because I think he's floating that more just, you know, it's part of the ultimate jerking around of Mitt Romney. That's my guess. I'd be happy to be wrong about that, but I don't think I am. Now, you know what? John Bolton is an interesting case study here, too, because John Bolton is a former ambassador to the United Nations. He had confirmation problems before, but you know, you're talking about a big difference. Confirmation problems occurred with a democratically led Senate.
Yeah.
Democrat Senate. You do not have that now. So right. It would really be a shot across the bow for a Republican Senate to turn down anybody that is being asked for here. And I want to get your thought on this, too. Now, Dr. Ben Carson for Housing and Urban Development got announced today. And earlier, Ben Carson said he wasn't really interested in this is not what he does. You know, he was a surgeon. He is a philosophical guy. He is really all about the doctrinal beliefs. And he's really not about the practice of bureaucracy. Will there be, I know you're in the House, you're in the different chamber, but does it seem to you that on Capitol Hill there will be people who want to post him up on, do you really want this job?
You know, maybe, but I think it'd be good. It's intriguing because when he said he wasn't interested or he didn't felt qualified initially, it's kind of hard to walk that back. But, you know, he's I think he's probably in a great position to do it. And again, it's, you know, even as a department head, it is some philosophy. It's like kind of coming up with leadership principles and ideas and getting people around you that can go out and implement them. And you know, for him, especially his background, he was raised poor, you know, kind of a self-made man.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think public housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a great example, a great kind of role model for the African-American community. So I think it's a good pick ultimately. But yeah, I was kind of taken aback at why you publicly say you're not interested and then reverse on it.
Yeah. All right. Now, Donald Trump took a shot at China on Twitter, of course.
Yeah.
And about how, you know, this goes back to this phone call. And we don't really know if the phone call was supposed to be or not supposed to be, or it was intentional. An intentional flouting of the policy, the one China policy. Or he did know, or he didn't know, or whatever it was. And it opens up all those questions that I think Donald Trump really enjoys the fact that we continue to ask, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, yes, no, he's a genius. No, he's an idiot savant. No, he's a genius. No, he's dumb. He's, you know, we keep going back and forth, at least the, you know, in the lamestream media, we keep doing that with him. But the foreign policy is something that you are expert in, Congressman. And I just wonder, and you've traveled all over the world and you've met with these leaders and you've listened to their concerns. You know, China, that's a big. That's the second largest economy in the world. That's a country we've not sought rivalry with. We've sought some form of taking advantage of both of these gigantic economic engines. And you know, you just wonder, where is that? Is that the kind of relationship to which the United States can comfortably bargain, do you think?
I think, you know, when it comes to China specifically and you know, like the Taiwan phone call, I guess the thing I would say on that is, if this is something that they had planned out in terms of kind of a shot to China to say, hey, we're the new sheriff in town. I mean, we have ridiculous policies like, you know, when the Taiwan military comes here to train, they're not even allowed to wear their uniforms in the United States. I mean, some of this stuff is like relics from 1979.
Right.
And I think if it was thought out, it actually was probably very smart what he did. Now, if it just happened to be one of these like, hey, I'll call Taiwan, that's where you get concerned, because it's like you can't shoot from the hip on foreign policy. But I tend to think that this was something that was planned out. I think it'll have a big impact. And ultimately, you know, I think in order to kind of get negotiations, get things from China, keep in mind, China has sat around and enabled North Korea to build nuclear weapons. They're the only country with any real power over North Korea. So I think it's important to kind of, you know, we don't want to go to war, I mean, obviously, right. But I think it's important to push back.
Do we want to go to economic war, though? I guess that becomes the question.
And that seems to be what he's suggesting, if you read his Twitter feed, which is where we get our news now.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right, right, exactly. But how does he believe about it? Well, here's what I know for sure. Just really mad at Alec Baldwin. Really, really mad.
Keeps coming up. He won't let it go.
Yeah, at Alec Baldwin. So this is a circumstance that we must now just acknowledge that the world has changed forever.
Yes.
Forever. Yes, and politics in America has now changed forever. And inextricably, there is no way that it's going backwards, because he won. And a winning tactic will be used for decades beyond its usefulness.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
His display of temperament, whether it's real or it's manufactured, his use of social media, his shoot from the hip kind of thing. Not everybody will be able to pull it off. Remember when Marco Rubio tried? It doesn't work.
Yeah,
it didn't work.
Yeah, you got to be very careful how you do it. But it's a brave new world, and so we'll just have to see where all this lands. And all right, so if people want to get involved in this organization, 1787, Constructing the Peace After the War, is this a PAC? What is this?
Yeah, people can be involved in it. It's an organization. They have PAC plans, but ultimately they just want to drive consensus. And nolabels.org is the website, so
okay.
It's worth
people
going
there.
Look.
All right.
Yep.
No labels.
All right, Congressman.
Right.
It was good speaking with you. Thank you for
as always. Enjoyed it.
Stopping by. Appreciate it, sir.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, guys.